from the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the University of Missouri. Welcome to Global Journalists. I'm Josh Kranzberg, in for Jason McClure. Every year, a handful of journalists from around the world are selected to be Alfred Friendly Fellows. These journalists are partnered with American news outlets in the hopes that they can learn and help spread U.S. news ideals, namely fair and accurate reporting. We're lucky enough to sit down with them to talk about their experiences reporting and what they hope to get from their fellowships. Joining us now is Tobile Hans. He's a reporter out of Johannesburg, South Africa, doing work for Africa Business News. He'll spend his fellowship with Forbes Media. Mr. Hans, welcome to Global Journalist.
Thank you so much, Josh.
So South Africa's media, according to Freedom House, is considered partly free. Simply put, talk to me about the environment there and your experiences as a journalist in South Africa.
Okay. That's correct. South Africa is free to journalists. Journalists are free to do anything they want to do. And as you know, that we are a new democracy, we're experimenting things and so forth and so forth. But what I can tell you now is that since now, after two decades of democracy, and things are starting to have cracks, you know, journalists are not feeling comfortable doing work, but they still do the work anyway. There's no political interference. But you sense somehow that politicians are not happy with the work that we're doing presently. If you look at ANC, the ruling party, they've been trying to introduce laws to control journalism, and saying that the self-appointed press ombuds, they are not doing their work. So now they feel like they need to have someone from the parliament, appointed by the government, to control the media, especially the print media. There's not much problems with the broadcasting, but it's print media that seems to be facing challenges.
Why do you think that is?
A majority of print media is not owned by the government. So you will have two separate groups of those who are pro the government and those who are sort of trying to do their work. Also, you must understand that some of the people that are owning the media houses now, they used to be political activists themselves. So they have some sympathy with the government, you know. But you'll have those that are trying to do their work, you know. So those are the people that the government is trying to suppress.
What's the reaction been in newsrooms in South Africa with the introduction or the talk of introducing these sorts of laws?
The situation is very tense, but thanks with that we have some advocacy groups like the SANEF. The SANEF is the body of editors that has been open in negotiations with government, and also the other groupings that advocate free press and so forth. The government is open to discuss things with them. And I know that there's this law that has been, they started introducing it in 2011, and then it's been ongoing, you know. They have not approved of it because it has been challenged. And we are so grateful to the fact that our law system is working so hard. They are not, as much as some of the judges are appointed by the government, but they work independently of the government.
Do you think the fact that South Africa is a relatively young democracy, that's playing into the tensions between journalists and the government?
Yeah, to some extent that is, because if you think of it, is that there were a lot of journalists who were activist journalists were during the apartheid time. So those journalists, they have not changed their allegiance to the ruling party. So they sort of like still in the pocket of the government. Mm. And if you look at it, we have lost so many journalists to being the government spokespeople, you know, spokesman, you know, because at some point they come out, you know, as to now we're supporting the government. But you have those young journalists like myself that are just new in the profession that are trying to be independent, and we're grateful that we get a support from international organizations.
Do you feel you have to fight even harder seeing journalists go to the other side? Do you feel that you have to dig even deeper and fight even harder, even just to get a normal story?
Yeah, we fight so hard because if you look at it, that, for example, in my newsroom, I'm one of the senior journalists in my newsroom, and that is not a norm in an environment where journalism is sort of thriving, because you will need people who've been there. You know, I think I'm relatively young to be a senior journalist in office. So at some point you don't know or you don't know the direction to take, you know, because we need some advice from our seniors that are not there.
While reporters are mostly left alone, like you said, violence against the media has ratcheted up recently. In January of 2014, a freelance photojournalist was shot and killed while covering a protest, the first journalist killed in the country since democracy took over in 1994. Do you feel safe as a journalist in South Africa?
To be honest with you, I do feel safe. But if a journalist was shot during a protest, it could be anyone. It could be police. It could be anything. In South Africa, there are so many outbreaks, the violence outbreaks that are happening. And those are the protests sometimes that are coming from communities because they are crying about service deliveries and so forth. And anyone can get shot, you know. I'm not saying that the journalist got shot for some reason, but what I'm saying is that, like, the violence in South Africa is still part of the system.
Is there fear when you're doing stories against the government or against politicians that will make them look bad? Is there any fear of retribution, of payback?
You do get that sense. We don't get along all the time with politicians. Most recently, before I came here, I had an interview with one of the ANC Women's League senior members. She invited me to her house, you know. But when I was in her house, I felt that I was being controlled. You know, I was not myself as a journalist, you know. But you do also get situations where you go to a presser and journalists who are sort of asking questions, penetrating questions, are being sidelined, you know, because they would tell you who they are welcoming in, who is not welcome.
How do you handle that? How do you handle knowing, like, you went to this politician's house and you said you felt like you were being controlled? How do you handle that in the moment? Then how do you handle that when you get back to the newsroom?
I think the important thing is to get to the place and get the story that you want to get. You know, we're not out there as an opposition to politicians or trying to make them to look bad. But all we want to do is to reflect or ask questions that needs to be asked to them. You know, we try to make that clear. And then if they are comfortable giving an interview, they will do so without you going around.
So let's go to your fellowship. It's with Forbes Media in New York. What will you be doing with them?
As I'm coming from Forbes Africa, and Forbes Africa is licensee of Forbes here in the States, one of the bits that I've been given here is doing an entrepreneurial section of business, of which that's something that I'm looking forward to do, because that's exactly what I'm doing back home. But also the other thing that I'm also interested in is their wealth section of the business, because we cannot do, from my office in South Africa, we cannot do the checking on wealth of people on our own. We have to refer our information to Forbes in the States to do it on our behalf. But now I think that will give me an opportunity to learn the ropes and tools, how to do that, and so that I can do it in the comfort of my own office.
So what do you hope to take back to South Africa once you're finished with this fellowship?
Yeah, there's so much. There's so much to learn from the States. States is a very independent media. That is my outlook of things. And also being here at this school, I've learned so much, you know. I've learned tools, how to sort of getting information that you cannot get. But I don't know if that will always be applicable in our office, but I hope that things will get better, and so that we can also do things as we please as journalists. But also, what I hope to learn from here are the skills to sort of make journalism much easier, and also you know, to impart whatever I'm learning from my experience here to my fellows in office back home.
In the Alfred Friendly Fellowship, South Africa is ranked the highest in terms of most free press. What similarities do you see between the South African media climate and the United States media climate from what you've seen so far?
Coming here, I was not shocked to see anything, you know. But having sat down with the journalism professors, I've realized that their work is much easier to get information, you know. As much as we are happy and comfortable, but it is very hard for us to get information. We have to go through months and months trying to get information. And by that time we get that information, the story is already stale.
Do you feel like there'll be a bit of a learning curve because of that, because information is a little more readily available in the United States?
Yeah, that is one of the things that I think is something that I would take home with me.
So what does the future of journalism in South Africa look like?
The future.
Easy answer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but this is future. I wouldn't lie. I don't want to exaggerate things here. I would come across as somebody who's sort of... telling the facts, but the future looks good in South Africa. But
despite the laws that are being
introduced or attempts to introduce them, but I think South Africa, if we can be together as journalists, because the other thing in South Africa again, journalists are not organized, are not allowed to organize themselves. There is no...
Like unionized?
Unionization of journalists in South Africa. If you're trying to do that, you get kicked out, you know?
Why is that?
It is because the bosses, they feel uncomfortable because journalists... for example, I'll give you an example of a lady who tried to organize her colleagues. It was not a question of organizing her colleagues in terms of trying to ask for more money or so forth, but they wanted to work as professionals there. But that made the bosses uncomfortable, and the lady was pushed out of the work.
So because she tried to not even unionize.
She was not unionizing, but she was trying to
talk. She just wanted to get like a society professional journalist.
Exactly, yeah. But if you sort of a group of three or two of two journalists are coming their heads together, and then the powers that be, they feel threatened.
So despite all that, you're still optimistic about the future of journalism in South Africa?
I am. I'm very optimistic there's future, yes.
Well, Tabile Hans, thank you so much for joining us on Global Journalist. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Josh.
This is Global Journalist. I'm Josh Kranzberg, in for Jason McClure. This week, interviews with international journalists who are in America as part of the Alfred Friendly Program. This is Global Journalist. I'm Josh Kranzberg, in for Jason McClure. This week, interviews with international journalists who are in America as part of the Alfred Friendly Program, which connects them with U.S. news outlets to help the spread of free and accurate journalism. If you're interested in more Global Journalist content, visit us online at globaljournalist.org. There you can read in-depth articles on international affairs and free press issues and download past episodes from our archive. We're also on social media. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Global Journ. Our next guest is Goce Aytulu, a reporter in Istanbul for Hürriyet, one of Turkey's largest newspapers. He'll spend his fellowship doing work for the Kansas City Star newspaper. Goce Aytulu, welcome to Global Journalist.
Thank you for having me.
So Turkey has never had a relatively good media landscape, but the past few years has seen President Recep Erdogan try and crack down more and more, including shutting down media outfits that have criticized him and the government. So what's it like there as a journalist?
I can say two different things about this. One, the as a journalist, become being there is a treasure for a journalist, because you have everything, every sources. You cannot understand actually the Islam crisis, refugees problem, Syrian war, or Kurdish issue without understanding Turkey. This is a good thing for journalists. But on the other hand, the journalism is not a garden of roses in Turkey, because in World Press Freedom Index 2015, we are in ranked 149. This is a very bad thing, because we struggle a lot of things, just such as lawsuits against journalists, censorship, self-censorship, something like that.
And have you been censored, or have you been told to stop doing stories or stop doing interviews or stop following certain stories?
I have fortune, because I work for the biggest independent newspaper in Turkey. We have also a publishing principal committee, non-partial and impartial publishing principles we have.
So if the government does something right, you'll report on that just as if they do something wrong?
We can. We just do our agenda. But in situation in Turkey, of course, affects on journalism. Mm-hmm. This is not related to opposite side or the pro-government side. This just about the situation.
President Erdogan famously during the Gezi Park protests tried on numerous occasions to shut down YouTube, mm-hmm. shut down Twitter. What was the reaction in the country when he tried to pull these moves? And what was the reaction in newsrooms or in newspapers or TV stations around the country when he tried to do that?
It's not a secret. Turkey now is divided between two sides. One opposition, half of the population is against president, and half of them support. But this is a very tough moment, like such as Gezi Park protests, and after that some lawsuits, and now biggest terrorist attacks such as ISIS and Kurdish issues. That's all effect on journalism, mm-hmm. and in the Western point of view, you can look, this is not related to a standard democracy. Mm-hmm. You cannot say, you cannot tell a people or journalists right to, this is right to think, this is not right to write them. But the political situation in Turkey, just like that, courts suddenly just make decision about shutting down YouTube or Twitter or social media. Mm-hmm. This is a very bad thing for a standard democracy.
So you say that Turkey is divided. That means that, correct me if I'm wrong, that mm-hmm. there are people who agreed with those moves, who said that shutting down YouTube or shutting down Twitter or controlling the flow of information is a good thing. Is that correct?
Not exactly
okay.
that thing, but some people doesn't care about shutting down of YouTube or social media, but you know, the population of Turkey, mostly, they care about the social media and democracy.
Okay. Our guest is Goce Aytulu, a reporter in Istanbul for Hürriyet. This is Global Journalist. I'm Josh Kranzberg in for Jason McClure. This week, interviews with international journalists who are in America as part of the Alfred Friendly Program, which connects them with U.S. news outlets to help the spread of free and accurate journalism. Our guest is Goce Aytulu, a reporter in Istanbul for Hürriyet.
Talk to me about those protests. It started as a relatively small protest over the urban development of a park, of Gezi Park, and it spiraled into massive demonstrations involving millions of people across that country, thousands of people injured, more than 3,000 arrests. Talk to me about your time and your experience while covering those protests.
Yeah, at the beginning, no one expected such a big uprising in Gezi Park because politicians saw this is a really small environment problem. Mm-hmm. We can solve with our policies, and but things.
It was originally viewed as just a small protest that they could shut down quickly. Okay.
Definitely. But people thought different. In all around Turkey, it became a different thing. Because first, it started with environment problem, then turned opposition and opposition problem. All around the Turkey, who felt himself or herself strange in the political situation, became a part of the uprising. Then there were big uprising and protests all around Turkey. Mm-hmm.
And so, was it difficult? As a journalist, to watch the crackdown of media, the crackdown of free speech, was it tough not to join in those protests, that you had to just cover them objectively of what was happening?
I think we did. I was working for a radical newspaper, and one of the objective newspaper of the Turkey. We covered all of the movement, uprising, protesters, objectively. And this is a tough times, tough conditions for journalists, because protesters didn't want to see journalists around the park because they didn't trust journalists.
Okay.
On the other hand...
So you were being hated from both sides, basically.
Yes.
You're being hated from the government for trying to report the truth, and you were being hated by protesters because they didn't trust you.
But we covered some stories about park. Then protesters were used to us and talked us freely, and we did cover some big stories then.
Do you see things getting worse in Turkey, or do you think that it's pretty much leveled off, or do you think Erdogan will continue to try and crack down on the media that is critical of him and is critical of the government?
It seems like that, but I'm not a pessimist person. I look optimistic. This is not a sustainable thing for Turkey, because we have a past, we have a history about democracy for over the 80 years. And this is not sustainable thing for Turkish people.
Do you think, I'm not asking you to predict the future, but do you think protests are coming about the crackdown of media? Do you think people are going to start demanding a free and open media in Turkey?
Actually, I don't know. We can't. They couldn't know of Gezi Park uprising. This is just related to democracy. And it would be, but the thing I can only see, this is not a sustainable thing for Turkey.
So let's switch gears now to your fellowship. You'll be working with the Kansas City Star newspaper, one of the top newspapers in the country. What will you be doing with them?
First, I begin for editorial page, and then we'll see.
What do you hope to get out of this fellowship?
This is amazing. Also, University of Missouri has a perfect style for learning something, the method, I mean. I gained everything in these 2 weeks, and I also take my experience to my newsroom, share many, many things, I think.
Do you think it will be...
This is amazing.
Do you think it will be a bit of a shock to go from Turkey, where the media is a bit more controlled, to the United States, especially one of the top papers like the Kansas City Star, where investigative reporting, you know, cracking down on, you know, finding corruption and bad things within government or within businesses is encouraged. Do you think that will be a bit of a shock to you?
No, we used to have investigative reporting and deeply investigations. But it would be very helpful for me as the aspect of journalism.
Well, that'll do it for this week's edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the University of Missouri. Many thanks to Tubile Hans and Goitja Aitula for taking the time to talk with us. If you're interested in more Global Journalist content, visit us online at globaljournalist.org. There you can read in-depth articles on international affairs and free press issues and download past episodes from our archive. We're also on social media. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Global Journ. Global Journalist Studio Director is Travis McMillan of RJI, and our audio engineer is Pat Akers of KBIA. For all of us here at Global Journalist, I'm Josh Kranzberg. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.